Mr. James, we were talking about your initial encounter with Bert Newman.
That's right.
And if you could continue on that.
Well, Bert, of course, he realised that here was a young, fresh-faced CPMS with about a year's service, and I don't think he liked it very much, but he was an old sweat of First World War medals. He was in the army, but it would take me about 10 years to become a sergeant. But here was I, right up through, in about just over 1 year, and I was a CPMS one, right below the sergeant major. It didn't please him. He was quite blunt with me. He said, "You're very young." He says, "The clean marking here." Yeah. But he says, "I think he's going to fly by well." I said, you don't know me, and give me the chance, and I'll prove myself to you. I said, I'm keen. I said, I'm not daft. I said, I'll do the job, and I'll do it as good as anybody will. But I said, all I want is your trust. He said, well, we'll see how we go on. Well, Bert had a good start. A good friend of mine was Colitely. He was a CSM at first, and then he became a regimental quartermaster sergeant. He was Bert's right-hand man. And I think he put Bert right about me, that I was a worker. And I was honest, and I was pulled out all the stops to do the very best for people. Bert also had a good staff in other junior people. Trudy Curran was a sergeant with bunions, and he couldn't march or walk.
And who did Fruity Curran do?
Fruity Curran, that's right, he was Bert's, he was the sergeant in charge of Bert's stores, wherever Bert went. And he was getting on in years. He must have been at least 50 plus. How he was there, I don't know, but he could hardly walk, you know, he had bad feet. But for all Fruity Curran, he was a good bloke, and he knew me very well at the end to get him for all his lower, large corporals and privates who were in Bert's stores. They were all good people. As were the daily, yeah, day after day, for a couple of years, for the Russians and the Americans, they played very well.
Was Fruity Curran, was he a Geordie, or was he a...
He was, I think a Fruity Curran. I think he was a southerner. I really don't know where he's southern, but I would say that he was Benson Hart's. For his very age, I think he was Benson Hart's. He probably came with us from Bedford. But I'm not sure about his origin, so I don't think he was a Durham man. Mm-hmm. But he spoke.
Who were the other members of Bert Newman's team then?
The young bloke there with glasses. He was a clean shaven young clerk. I don't think he shaved at all. But he was the chap who was doing all the book work. Old Bert himself did a lot of book work himself with his own hand. And he had a very slow, steady scrawl that was really very legible and very. But he got there. His staff were very friendly, and they, of course, would get the secret messages of the companies. But suddenly, of course, I was posted from headquarter company to D company.
And when was that?
And that was in Rye.
Oh, so we're moving forward a little bit. We'll stay in Thetford.
That's right.
So to take me through a day or a week, because obviously I had a pay parade and so on, take me through a week as a colour sergeant at this stage, what your routine would be.
The first thing I had to do, knowing that there were six platoons in the headquarter company, number one was the signals platoon, I knew all them, and so I used to have to get the impressed pad, which was the wages pad, ready for payday, which was usually at the end of the week on a Friday, I think it was, and I had to get that ready for a Thursday for the officer to know the total of money required and go to the bank. I think it was all Coots Bank in those days. Go to the bank wherever they went to, I don't know, for army authority to draw the money. Mm-hmm. And the officers would get my impressed account of the names, army number, rank and name of everybody due for pay that week. And it was the flat rate for all privates, you know, they got 10 shillings. Mm-hmm. And threepence a week was stopped for widows and orphans, and 3 and 9 pence was put to their credits, kept by the regimental paymaster, to accumulate. But they weren't paid the full 14 more, they weren't the privates, they weren't paid the full 2 more a day, they were only paid 10 shilling note. It was convenient to give them a note, and they signed for it, 10 bob. If anybody wanted to draw some of their credits out, their accumulated credits, they were going on leave, they would give the CPMS advance notice, he's going on leave next week, and could he please draw? He thinks that he's in credit £9, you know, £9, 19 and 11. Could he please draw £8 to take home on leave with? Right, you are. Well, I'll see how you're. Yes, we'll put that down then. Right, you are. And for next week, I don't know about it. No, it's okay, you know, for next week's extra payments, chaps. Mm-hmm. We're going on leave and want to draw some of their credits. They're entitled to do so. Their pay as well was also recorded in their maybe 64 part 2, which is their pay book.
Mm-hmm.
And that showed what their drawings were as well every week. But the interest account went to the regimental paymaster, which in those days was York. But of course, all they had to do was sort of hand it over to the CO, to the company commander, and he would dispose of that important paperwork, you see. So there would be the pay parade.
What about deductions? Were there deductions for?
Yes. Well, normally, if anybody was in trouble and they had confined to barracks, sometimes they didn't get confined to barracks. They got stopped pay, especially if they lost clothes or clothing. And but if they lost their clothing, they would have to pay for the clothing, and then they also get a fine as well. You know, they suddenly hit their pocket sometimes. But it is my job to make sure that there were no fiddlers. And so I will call at my request whenever I felt like it, if I thought that I would cast somebody out, and I make sure that nobody would be exempt, including some of the sergeants. I would call for a kit inspection for me to inspect every kit once in a blue moon, with the assistance of the order sergeant of the day, and sometimes the second lieutenant. Because, you know, a soldier could accuse me of victimization, saying, well, it wasn't so. And so the second lieutenant as well would verify that the articles are missing. What they used to do is to give their long pants and their long woolly vest to Grandad when they were home on leave, and hope that he wouldn't be discovered. We didn't get, you know, they were, I'd call a snap kit inspection, and in Winchester, it is very, very convenient to use the big, big square lawns behind the big houses. In Decambridge, I mean, they were spread in various buildings, but I had the big lawn for kit inspection, and they had their kits laid out on the ground sheet there in order that I wanted to check. And if anybody was short, I was ruthless and make a note. I would re-indent for that article and that soldier. And there's a price for everything as well.
Yeah.
And that soldier.
That was a set price by the army.
Well, that's right. That's right. The pants were the very best sort of woolen, beautiful quality, you know, all other socks as well. What we used to do as well. It's a roof to give Granddad half a dozen pairs of socks, you know. And some of them used to say, oh, if I'm caught out, it's well worthwhile. They couldn't buy the socks in CBC anyway, they had coupons and whatnot. And the army was clothing Grandad. I know that. Mm. And so they were caught out anyway. And some of them, like Charlie Bray, when his tongue's been loose, when we met last year, you know, he said, I suppose he said, you know, when you gave the one issue out to me, you kept a lot back for yourself. I said, Charlie, that's a very naughty thing to say. I said, in all honesty, I said, I'm surprised you didn't say that, Charlie. He said, yeah, well, I know what CQ message is. I said, you've got the wrong idea about me, Charlie. And the other time, I said, I must correct you. I said, that morning when I gave you, said you gave me a very low ration. I said, you were the eighth of a pint. I said, you're 8 men to a pint mug. He said, yeah, but by the time I got mine, so it was hardly ever. I said, if you come and see me, Charlie, I'll be giving you another problem.
This is the last time you saw him in action, said,
said
your name.
He said, yeah. I didn't get much left. I said, well, I said, if you said to me, oh, look, when I got left, I would give you a tipple. He said, yeah, but I bet you kept back yourself. I said, I did not, Charlie. I had whatever I had left, I had a hand back straight away to the QM. Mm. And I did. Mm. I said, in any case, I would never think of doing any of that to your blood, especially that you bring into action as well. Mm.
So, so that was one duty, was paper raid and doing all the paperwork for that and
paper
the deductions and so on.
Paper raid,
that was on a Friday. How did you spend the rest of your week?
Well, it was Friday. The rest of the week, Russians returned daily to Bert Newman, the company strength. If anybody was in hospital, I was noted minus one, plus one. If anybody came back, or anyone on leave, I'd have to have my nominal role. And daily, the state. And I would have to indebt for Russians according to what I had there. And it was cyber coming to Marland. And this indent went to Bert Newman. The number of bodies in Russia's talk tomorrow. And so the 1500 truck, I'd go down with the 1500 truck and the driver, company driver, at the appointed hour, where Bert Newman wanted us, it's usually in the morning, about 10:30, 11 o'clock, and get the company's Russians. And they'd all go in the 1500 truck and back up to the cookhouse, hand them over to the cook as to the Russians for the day and all that. So that was the Russian thing. Then I had all sorts of returns through. I had a 1098 thing, which was bigger than that. Mm-hmm. A long program, countless pages. And I turned them over and I'd have 1, 2, 10, whatever I was holding for the company. And that 1090, that had to be kept up to date for the QM's inspection or the colonel's inspection at a month's notice. So consequently, I was forever working on that. What I did, I was telling you about mousetraps again. Mm. I had mousetraps again. And in my little office in Winchelsea, along the wall, I had about 12 mousetraps nailed to the wall. And under the springs, I kept my paper, my happenings. Hospital, drug blogs, leave, the names, you know, coming tomorrow, et cetera, so and all these, I'm adding them daily. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I had all the most classes on the paper. Mm-hmm. And so I knew who was away and who was coming and whatnot, and anything that happened, bit of paper, I had all the most classes. Mm-hmm. So I had a good system.
So you spent a lot of time on that during the week, just filling in those forms?
Doing office work. I was on my bottom, in my office next to the company commander, who was next door, Joe Graylin. And he'd call me from time to time, but this, that and the other, and I'd wait and see him.
This is in the D Company days.
Right, yeah.
Did you have Lance Corporal or Corporal who was like, that you were given orders to that would help you with the paperwork, or didn't trust anybody to do that besides yourself?
Well, I didn't know. I would sometimes it would necessitate the NCOs finding out information from the lads in his platoon, and I'd get platoon returns on something that were not of much importance, and the NCO would get that information for me. Mm-hmm. And bring it back.
But your responsibilities were solely food, nothing to do with ammunition or anything like that?
No, the RSM's job was ammunition. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. The RSM handled all the ammo, but I had food, guns, stores, all the stores, and the food was the same thing. Mm-hmm. So I had the food return, and Joe Newman to deal with the food. I had the clothing to be dealt with as well. Mm-hmm. I had the pay, which is the most important thing, because gave the soldiers wanted his pay. I worked with the junior officers who would say, well, when will the Empress return be ready? Tonight, Thursday, as you want. Okay, well, I'll come in about 4 o'clock and get from you and see what token I've got for tomorrow. And he would come, and then when he'd come, I'd sort out all the pound notes and the 10 pound notes and the silver, half a crown, 2 bowls, and he would call out, I'd be here, private blogs, pensions, no, right. Somebody else, 15 and sixpence. So
the amounts would vary between soldier to soldier.
I get the sign, so
would they be on parade?
The officer paid the money, the chap side, and then he'd get them in front and salute the officer. About 10 miles away.
Would all the entire company be
all the entire company would be waiting in orderly fashion, keeping quiet, because you know, it would be bedlam otherwise, waiting to come in one by one to be dealt with.
But they wouldn't actually be formally on parade as such?
No, yeah. They would be in a crowd outside the door, waiting, not making too much noise. And I'd call the name, you see, the next one, and he'd come in. But he knew who'd be, because they all knew the alphabetical position.
So what were your other duties? That's pay parade and the 1098 forms and so on. What were your other duties during the day?
I'd be attending parades myself sometimes. I would I'd be called down to the left to the quartermaster's office and dealing with matters down there. I'd probably be over talking to the MT officer, the motor transport officer, about certain things and his requirements, because some of his requirements came through me. All sorts of I didn't have a dumb moment actually, although I'm my own boss. I would have to tell the company commander, though, who was in the next office to me, if I wasn't there, where I was going. I'm going out, sir, up to dinner. It's my turn today to inspect the any complaints. Oh, that's wrong. Okay. Oh, I didn't know that then. That's wrong. Okay. So I'd go to the dining hall at about 12 o'clock, 12:10. And it's my turn, because in Winchester, as I said, it was a sticky message.
This is moving forward to Winchester, yeah.
And so I'd be there, and the orderly sergeant of the day would be there from both companies, from C and D, and the orderly officer of the day from both companies would be there as well. So I'd be there regarding the food questions.
And what would they?
And so we go, when they were all served, we sort of go around then, we're very, all right, anything all right, any complaints? I know, sir, all right, sir. Right, next table. Anything all right here? Maybe no, sir. But, you know, they never said it would be, but Monty wasn't there.
We'll get on to that. But, sir, going back to the Thetford, this would be the routine in Thetford as well. You'd go around and ask any complaints.
Any complaints, that's right, everything all right. And it is a secret message job to be there in case they say, well, we have got enough, or what's the matter?
Was the officer would ask the question, or would it be the sergeant? Would it be you? Or
the officer, the lieutenant.
Yeah.
Other the kudos, you know.
Can you remember any incidents where, apart from the business with Montgomery, and we'll get onto that in due course, do you remember any incidents in the early days in Thetford, or even at Winchelsea, where people would say that they didn't like the food?
Not to us. Not to us, you never say there's no good there. After all, we knew a secret message, but the cook sergeant was doing a damn good job. And they had their training, and they'd been away to the ACC school, and they knew what to do with the day's rations. Day's rations changed from time to time. For example, in wartime, there were endless tins of pilchards, you know, coming up, not every day. But they were getting rid of these pilchards, which must have been stored for years in some warehouse, you know. So there'd be pilchards, you know. Move a pilchard, you might get a complaint. Telling me fish, sir, you know. Well, pilchards are very good for you. You know, they contain zinc. had all the sort of things. For example, they liked their porridge. There was no alternative. It was porridge every morning. But there's sometimes they had prunes. For dinner, you know, there wasn't much variation because the wartime food just was not, you know, it wasn't brilliant. The Spam sometimes came on the market and whale meat and things like that. I've had their quota of that, Spam and whale meat, you know.
So the main meal of the day could consist of that. What might it be?
Well, they try and doctor it up somehow. They might make a sort of shepherd's pie out of it, you know. And try and disguise it like with them. And they had soiled egg sausages. It was as if they were made of fire or hose pipes, you know. And oh, they were ghastly. Made of soya beans, you see. They weren't meat. And nobody liked the soya sausages. So sometimes they'd be grizzled in the complaints about soya sausages.
You said if they didn't complain to the officer and to you, who would they complain to? Would it come up through the town?
We had to be there. We had to be there by, it was really custom to be there at their meal times to sort of show the soldiers that we were interested in their welfare and that nobody was going short and nobody was refused or nobody had a poor ration. Everybody had to have adequate grub. And they were very fed in that, well looked after, I must say. And normally, although we were on detachment in Winchester, there were two companies out there, you know. We didn't see Sergeant Battle, the Cook Sergeant, because he was in Rye.
Sergeant Battle was he?
He was over all cooks.
This is going back to the getting back to Thetford. He was in charge of Thetford as well.
Right through.
Yeah, and you have a story about Sergeant Battle and his first name.
Yeah, well, Sergeant Battle. He was quite a nice chap. They called him Sybil, but he was far from Sybil. He was far from being a woman. He was a good soldier. He was a Beds and Hearts, ex India, long service, and came from books, Amersham. And he was very popular because he was easy to get on with. He was well built, and he was easy to get on with. He could get on with anybody, but in a rough house, if there was one, like in a pub fight or something like that, he was deadly. He really was. He was Ben fighting Sybil.
Do you have any memories of him in that? Can you remember any incidents of that?
Well, I mean, I knew his reputation, you see, because. I knew that he was a tough guy. I knew that, and yet he was Sergeant Battle. But he was, I got on very well with him. But I knew that if anybody took advantage of him, he could handle himself. You know, he was an old soldier, and he had his close friends and his cronies all the way through. All the old Beds and Hearts sergeants, really, knew Sybil, and he was a very popular bloke. I knew him very well, and all the secret messages liked him.
Who were his other cronies, then? Who were his other cronies?
Well, Tony Baker was one, to be honest. There was Sergeant Mattin. He was the police provost sergeant. He was another one. Mm. He was quite a character. I went out with him a few times, you know. Old Mattin, he's good drinking, like in Folkestone, quite a number of pints. But they were a damn good company. They were a damn good company. That was, we stick together. And in Yarmouth, great Yarmouth.
That's moving forward a little bit. Still in the Thetford, around about this time, Colonel Murray took over, who was a Grenadier Guardsman. Was there any change in the style of how the battalion was run? Did that permeate down to...
Well, I've got down here a little notes which I made. I thought that Colonel Murray was
Sebag Montefiore.
Sebag Montefiore.
Yeah.
I'm sure he was. He was after Moribund Ahmad. and Sive Montefiore was down in Thetford. So that Kilda Valley, in my memory, and time of events, was between Scotland, after Mortimer and Thetford. Sive Montefiore certainly wasn't with us in Scotland, it was Murray.
So you differ with the battalion history in that regard.
Yeah. But he was guards, I mean, he was a guards officer, but he wasn't this very long. He was tall. We knew he was a colonel on all the CS orders, you know, he was telling about it. But
because he introduced the shoulder flashes, the Durham Light
Infantry. He had his officer's cap on and his guard's cap badge and his moustache. And he, I must say that he was tall, he was a typical guard's lieutenant colonel. Now he's puzzled as to why he was in the DLI. But I'm sure that he was before lieutenant colonel, because he was with us for quite a while at Thetford. And he was very, very well remembered for his tin hat, which was too small for him.
Right.
It was like a pimple on his head.
This is Sebag Montefiore.
He had a great big bull neck and red face, and he liked his whiskey. He's Jewish. I don't know how to get to, you know, he's a nice chap. But yeah, he was a big, big, full faced chap, and his tin hat was like a pimple, it was too small. We all said that. And that was nothing else to get my story. He was well known in the city, you know.
Yeah. Now, regardless of the time frame of these two colonels, but through early 41 and into late 41, we've talked about the first big exercise that you can remember. But Murray in particular seems to have been keen on like a guardsman-like appearance for his troops.
I suppose really speaking, you know.
Because the battalion history talks about the 5'5" Gardee, you know, the little...
Yes, I mean...
any memories of that?
I remember particularly, I was never before him, you know, but I remember him very, very well indeed. And he was a quiet, quiet spoken, affable chap. And I thought, well, what's he doing with the DLI, you know, and we've all got sort of, he's about 5'6", 5'8", but he didn't, for the time being.
Did you notice an improvement in the standard of turnout under his command?
I remember there was a blitz once on the need for a bit of ball, but I don't think personally that I can remember any improvement under him, although he was no doubt he intending the company commanders of the battalion to smarten up. But that went all the way through, insofar as the beds and hearts NCOs were concerned anyway. There was no, but the beds and hearts regiment in the ITC in Bedford was a very severe establishment, and discipline there was of the highest order, and so was Claremont.
So you felt that in the DLI there was it would really just be the light infantry pace that was the big difference,
the
turnout.
We were doing the best we could because, you know, we had been under canvas. What can you do for turnout under canvas, I ask you? What can you do when you have got good sleeping quarters?